Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Rain Marine Electronics.
Welcome back to Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. And you know, I look back along my life and think, gee whiz, we could have done things a little bit differently. Look at what Tyler Anderson's done with his 200,000. We could have fished our way through college, Joe.
I would have went to college if I could have fished.
Okay, Tyler Anderson, welcome to the show. Tyler's Real Fishing YouTube channel. Fished collegiately. Dude. How did you do this, man? How did you get here in your mid-20s?
Yeah. A D1 full-ride scholarship to Texas A&M on a bass fishing scholarship? Come on, dude. Did you get recruited out of high school?
The scholarship's more criteria. Thank you guys so much for having me on. College fishing was a blast, and just the fact that I get to be 24 years old and travel around the country making videos of catching the bass is definitely a blessing.
Oh, I hate you.
I would have liked to see the conversation with your parents where you said, listen, I'm going to just start this YouTube channel and fish, Mom and Dad. And they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's YouTube.
How did that conversation go?
I mean, it was definitely not I'm going to make a job out of this right away, because I didn't even think you could make money on YouTube for a long time. You know, when I was making videos when I was 16, 17, 18, I didn't even know that was a possibility. So as soon as the money started to slowly come in, they got more and more supportive, and now they are my biggest supporters, biggest fans. And I was actually out filming some freelance stuff with the Bass Pro Tour this morning, and they were out there at our home lake. They were kind of, you know, filming me and posting videos on Facebook of their son doing his job. So they're definitely huge supporters of what I do.
Well, you do a fantastic job with your videos, and a bunch of those videos have to do with Yamaha Boating Academy. We brought this up earlier in the show. There's a lot of new boaters across the country. Last year, 300,000 new boaters in the U.S. That's a lot of folks back in their boats, down at the ramp, forgetting to put their plug in, not knowing how to dock all that stuff.
We see all these folks on Qualified Captain. They give us lots of entertainment.
Yeah, they make the Instagram the famous Qualified Captain page. But listen, you have some great videos on there with some tips on how to do this stuff. You know, and some of the stuff that I particularly enjoyed. I watched some of it this morning. Were your boat launch videos? Can you run folks through some tips that you have for when you get to the launch? What do you do? How do you get your boat ready? And then once you dump it in the water and back into the dock, all that stuff, run folks through your program at the boat launch in the morning, Tyler.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys mentioned that there's a lot of examples out there of some pretty poor boat backers. And a lot of the times I don't think it's necessarily negligent. It's just people don't know what to do. And they see their buddy backing their wakeboard boat down. They're like, oh, I can go out there and back a boat. And the thing is, you can't. You are not born with the innate ability to back a boat down a ramp. And so the number one tip that I have for people, and I talk about this in that Yamaha Boating Academy series I did, is that you just have to practice. I don't care if you're going to a Walmart parking lot or if you're going to a boat ramp at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday to get practice. Just go someplace where you're not going to be stressed, because, I mean, we've all felt that at some point when you are in a boat ramp and you got people behind you and they're glaring at you, and maybe it's early morning and you know, you forgot to turn your lights off, and people are honking at you, get your lights off, and you automatically start making worse decisions as you're backing down, which leads to a worse experience. So really just go get familiar with how your tow vehicle interacts with your trailer. Of course, single axle, dual axle, they will interact. They will react differently to how your wheel turns and how quickly that thing can jackknife. So it's really just understanding and becoming almost muscle memory, how your truck and your trailer work together. And then the next thing is just take it slow and do micro adjustments. Do not make huge, big adjustments, because then you'll be snaking down the boat ramp, and that definitely is not efficient or appealing. So,
rest assured, if a crowd starts to form and watch you, it's not because they're admiring your form, okay?
Yeah, and what you touched on, Tyler, was practice. You know, a lot of folks, maybe they take their boat out two or three times a year. Look, you're never going to become a professional boat backer if you're only doing it two or three times a year. And those two or three times, a crowd forms. And like you said, it doesn't take much to make you nervous at the boat ramp,
When the lawn chairs and the scorecards start showing up when you're still back and you're still on the ramp, that's not good. That's not good.
So what are the – do you have a checklist when you get to the boat ramp, you know, boat plug – straps, the blocks off the motor. Do you have maybe seven or eight items on your checklist, buddy, that you run through before you even back the boat in?
Totally. So I also cover this in another video on the series. If people are more visual learners, they can go watch the video. But I kind of go from, you know, bow to stern. So I start, you know, getting out of the truck, and at least my Skeeter boat has two safety straps or a safety chain and a safety strap. So I always unhook the safety chain and then, of course, make sure any electronics on the front of my boat and trolling motor are, you know, don't have any covers on them or anything. And then I work my way back and I'll unhook, of course, everything on the back of the boat. So I've got the two straps from the trailer to the boat. I've got the main engine block, of course, the steering block. And then my Skeeter, even if I forget, luckily, to put the plug in, I have a plug right next to my throttle. So I've had many times where the boat's already in the water and I can just flip that switch. But, of course, 98% of boats out there, you still have to bend down and screw the plug in. So I just go from back to front and make sure everything's good. And then one thing I talk about, I'm pretty sure in the series, is that I don't unhitch the boat completely from the bow until I have that boat in or near the water on the ramp, because I've seen too many videos of boats sliding off the trailer.
It's fine. You can always just unhook it. It'll be all right.
Nothing's more embarrassing than premature launch.
I totally agree, Tyler. I've seen the same thing. Yeah, that's
nothing
that's
worse than a beautiful Skeeter bass boat laying on the ramp.
Yeah, especially in a lake. You can't count on that tide to come up and float you again.
Then if you're launching, go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
No, we're talking with Tyler Anderson here of Tyler's Real Fishing, and he's a Yamaha pro. I just kind of wondering, how long have you been with Yamaha, and tell us a little bit about the genesis of your involvement with Yamaha, Tyler.
Yeah, so I've kind of gone back. My family's been a lake family since the day I was born. We had jet skis and sailboats, and we had a Malibu wake setter. So we were kind of on the side that anglers hate for a while. And I was always confused why anglers would, you know, throw me a middle finger every once in a while when I was wake surfing. And then as I became an angler, I realized, oh, wake surfers at 8 a.m. are not looked upon very highly. And so we always grew up on the water, but then my dad realized when I was in middle school, that I fished a lot more than I wake surfed, and I still love both activities, but he decided, since I was the last child in our family, just to sell the wakeboard boat and get a bass boat so he could make memories of me, you know, throughout the entire year, not just the summer. And so I'm incredibly grateful for that. My dad loves me a whole lot. And so we kind of started fishing together in middle school, and we had a Skeeter with a Yamaha, a 2000 Yamaha, which, by the way, I think is still one of the best motors Yamaha ever made, the original V-Max. And Yamaha 225. And so I just had supreme confidence in Yamaha. So when I got to partner with Skeeter in 2018 for the first time and get a new boat every year as a part of the deal, I just had a lot of confidence in that. And as soon as Yamaha got wind of what I was doing with Skeeter on the video side, they wanted to hop in and get me on board. And it kind of took my faith and my ability to speak and said, we're going to let you teach people how to, you know, properly operate their boat so they can have a safe and efficient time on the water. And luckily we began the series right as a pandemic was happening. And of course, sad, you know, what do you call it, scenario. But I think it allowed a lot of people to get out in the outdoors, which led to a lot of incompetence, which is exactly why the series is needed.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's just an insatiable thirst for instruction. And your videos on Tyler'sRealFishing.com and the Yamaha Boating Academy are so well done and so approachable, and take kind of the, you know, your basic approach to just all the basics, right? So just jump on Tyler's Real Fishing. It's a great YouTube channel, over 200,000 followers. Definitely can't be wrong. Tyler, we appreciate it, man. We're gonna ping you back a little bit later this summer, just see how things are going for you and what else is going on. And man, you ever find yourself up in this neck of the woods, I'd like to show you a little saltwater action up in the Great Pacific Northwest, my friend.
That'd be amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thanks.
Have yourself a great
Thanks, Tyler. We really appreciate it. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The American Pacific Mortgage Northwest Outdoor Report, also known as the Sportsman Sports Center, is brought to you by the great folks at HomeLoanAngler.com, your guide to the most competitive rates, buy or refi.
Be sure to call in sick this next Wednesday, May 19th, for the Puget Sound Shrimping Opener. The May 19th opening date, which happens to be midweek, offers favorable tides, and shellfish managers are hoping the midweek opener will keep marine areas within their quotas. Last spring, participation was so high in the Puget Sound Shrimp Opener, the some areas went beyond their quota with just a single day of shrimping. Some marine areas like Hood Canal and the San Juan Islands, for instance, will get additional openings after May 19th. Check the WDFW regulations online for more information about the upcoming Puget Sound Shrimp season.
More folks hitting the water. A recent report from the Recreational Boating and Fishing Foundation showed that 55 million people went fishing in 2020 across the United States. 18% of the population went fishing in 2020, which is the highest rate in over a decade. Youth participation increased by 53%. 13% more Hispanics went fishing. Close to 20 million female anglers took to the water, representing a 10% increase. That's the most lady anglers ever recorded. All of this is great news for businesses in the tackle and boating industry are seeing the highest demand for their products in many, many years.
A great set of tides are set up to make this an outstanding weekend to target lingcod in the Puget Sound. Kevin John at Holiday Sports in Burlington expects to see a lot of lingcod coming out of the San Juan Islands this weekend. He says these tides are perfect for drifting live greenling around some of the rocky structure in the islands for lings. He also likes lancer and teaser jigs, and will run a 6 to 10-ounce jig depending on the current to get down into the strike zone. Lingcod season in Puget Sound runs from May 1st through June 15th, and they must be between 26 and 36 inches to keep.
The Eastern Strait of Juan de Fuca has been open 3 days a week since April 22nd. Fishing has been good on the banks and around Port Angeles and marine areas 3, 4, and 5. The season is open 2 days a week on Thursdays and Saturdays through May 22nd, and marine areas 1 and 2 are open 2 days a week on Thursdays and Sundays through May 22nd. There's additional days scheduled later in May and June if there's sufficient quota left. Dave Johnson from Kitsap Marina in Port Orchard thinks the halibut fishing will be excellent out of Westport, with the option of either fishing the Grays Canyon area northwest of Westport or the Yellow Eye Conservation Area south of Westport, which is open for bottom fishing for the first time in about 10 years. Johnson said he'd go straight to the prairie off La Push if he was fishing halibut in Marine Area 4. That's been a consistent halibut producer for many years.
Special hunt applications open. Hunters can now apply for special permit tags here in Washington State. The special tag application period opened up on April 26th and runs only through May 26th. Hunters can apply for special tags for deer, elk, mountain goat, moose, bighorn sheep, and fall turkey. Drawing a special tag allows the lucky hunter to be in the woods at times and dates that are beyond the general hunting season, when the potential for taking a trophy animal are at their very highest. Log on to the hunting section of the WDFW website and get started with your special hunting tag application today.
Data just released from WDFW shows Washington's wolf populations continue to grow. The wolf population has reached its highest level in the state since the wolf management plan was adopted back in 2011. There are now 132 wolves in 24 packs, mostly in eastern Washington, and another 46 wolves in 5 packs on the Colville Indian Reservation. The wolf population increased by 24% from 2019 to 2020, and 4 new packs are now established near Navarre Mountain in Okanagan County, Vulcan Mountain in Ferry County, Onion Creek in Stevens County, and Skookum Peakez Pend Oreille County.
The Nez Perce Tribe in Idaho just released a grim outlook for Snake River, Spring Chinook, and Steelhead. Biologists with the tribe released an analysis that shows a path to near extinction for 31 of 32 Chinook stocks and 16 Steelhead stocks in the Snake River Basin. Chinook stocks in the basin have been declining by 19% a year and Steelhead stocks by 18% a year for the last 10 years. That puts Spring Chinook at a 77% chance of quasi-extinction in the Snake River, and A&B run Steelhead at a 44% chance of becoming extinct. The biologists that released the paper say the path to near extinction could occur as soon as 2025, when there might not be enough fish left to even rebuild these stocks. Could Idaho Congressman Mike Simpson's plan to tear down the lower four dams on the Snake River come into play to help rebuild salmon and steelhead runs on these rivers? Well, these grim predictions certainly give his sweeping dam removal plan more credence.
The American Pacific Mortgage Northwest Outdoor Report has been brought to you by the great folks at HomeLoanAngler.com, your guide to the most competitive rates, buy or refi.
Yeah, indeed. Do go hit Home Loan Angler. Our good friend Mark, man, he hooked me up with the really killer rate. So go check that out, HomeLoanAngler.com. So I have kind of turned around on this Snake River deal, Robbo. And if you're, for a while, I was looking at just the bare cost of it, thinking that, okay, look, taking out those dams has to be, you know, in the billions of dollars. And I'm thinking, all right, well, if you're going to spend that kind of money, you know, what's your cost benefit going to be there? Wouldn't we do better by taking some serious looks at predation, both pinniped and avian? But now, you know, after talking to Buzz Ramsey, and Buzz has been on the forefront of this, and he's working with the guys at Atchery Wild Coexist as well. By the way, if you haven't seen their clip Beneficial, which is Atchery Wild Coexist's new YouTube video, you better go check it out. But you know, I'm kind of on the bandwagon with this whole Snake River deal, man. It's a difficult situation. It's going to have impacts, but if Simpson's plan comes to fruition, it's going to keep a lot of groups whole. And I mean, you know, we're talking about everybody in the Clarkston-Lewiston Valley. I mean, that Lewiston, Idaho is a seaport because of those dams. There's going to be some major impacts to, you know, grain shipping and all that kind of stuff. But you know, bottom line is, man, we've got to do something about these Snake River runs and some of the best habitat left in Idaho.
And look at all the money we've already hucked at this. It's a $35 billion plan. Well, you know how these things are go. That'll be $50 billion by the time it's all said and done. But is it worth it to let these runs go extinct? I don't know. No. We're hucking money at this left and right. We've hucked, I don't remember the number. Was it $20 billion at this already? And we've gone nothing but backwards.
Yeah, it was huge.
And at what point do you have to do something drastic? I mean, you look at the Tennessee Valley Authority.
You got to get a little crazy.
You look at what's going on elsewhere in the country with these huge hydroelectric projects one way or another, and some of the money that's been dumped into this stuff. I mean, this could be – it actually could help our economy rather than kill it if it's done
correctly.
That's
exactly right.
I don't know. I guarantee they're taking a long, hard look at it now with some of these numbers that are coming out. Yeah, we'll see how this goes. It's definitely very interesting, and it's right in our backyard, so we got to watch how this thing plays out.
Well, and one that's even closer to our backyard is the Skagit City Light Project, right? Which is, you know, coming up against the Sauk Sioux Attle tribes and the other Upper Skagit tribes. It's, you know, Seattle City Light's assertion that those dams have no effect on salmonid populations is laughable, ridiculous, and easily refutable. And so now there's a little more political will. So we're probably going to see some more mitigation and remediation on the Skagit Sauk system because of it, and that's going to help, you know, the local angling economy as well. So yeah, it's interesting times. At least, you know, now and with the SRKW prey availability issue, you know, and some more money available for WDFW. Yeah, interesting times for sure. I'm pretty interested in the shrimp opener, and I don't know a better guy.
Let's go to Bubba. He's just money. He's going to dial everybody in for the opener this year. So let's audible to Bubba here and see what he's got to say.
Bo-mac.com. Go check that site out. That's the website of our next guest, none other than Bob Bubba Buchanan, joining us next here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Wellcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Well, some of my favorite times being in my my Duckworth wheelhouse involve this particular gentleman who's joining us next. And is really, Joey, we mentioned this earlier in the show, no less than revolutionized our...
He's always making stuff better.
He's always doing stuff like this. Bob Bubba Buchanan of Bo-mac.com. Welcome back to the show, Bob Buchanan.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me.
You got to be fired up about the shrimp opener this week, man.
Oh man, it's going to be awesome. If everything goes as planned, I will be able to participate, but it all depends on any last minute product flow, whether I got to drive a truck up and down I-5 or drive a boat.
Oh my gosh,
over
are
to
you kidding?
Island.
You better be out there shrimping.
So we sit here on Saturday, okay, and the shrimp opener is Wednesday. If you want to make true or false, prove me wrong. If you want a really good bait, you better start right now or pretty soon to make your bait for that midweek opener? What's your reaction to that, Bob Buchanan?
Well, especially with it being work days, you want to be done and ready to roll come Wednesday morning, oh dark 30, because you got what, 4 to 6 hours, depending where you're at, to get it done. So you better be ready. I've already ground all my pellets. They're in the ground up form, and my pellets come with oil, and they're ready to roll. And I am going to tomorrow afternoon put in the mixture of I use a monster mash, I call it, from Ray's, and I grind it up in the blender, and I will add that to it Sunday night, because I normally do it the night before, but I'll probably be working.
Well, so how do you grind your pellets up?
Mix it in. What's that?
Bubba, how do you grind your pellets up? What do you do you use a blender, or how do you do the pellets? Because they're not easy to grind
up.
No, they're not. You could get a commercial grinder, but I'll tell you what works best, if your wife doesn't know it, is, or a good friend, go borrow his margarita blender that has like three blades in it.
Yeah.
And you can do a red cup at a time in like 10 seconds. And in an hour, I can get through 5 gallons of those things pretty quick.
Nice. Do you freeze this? Do you put them in the containers and freeze them, or do they go in the fridge?
No,
how do you keep them?
And that's the beauty of the pellets that are oil filled. Pellets themselves that are oil filled are preserved and pretty much last a long time. They got a huge shelf life, even when you grind them. So I grind them into 5 gallon buckets, proportionately for a trip that I'm going to fish. And then I'll take that 5 gallon bucket, mix my macro mash in with it that's been gone through that same blender, and throw in a little cat food pate with it and mix it all up. And I will not liquefy that mixture until the morning of when I'm going out shrimping, because if you put it back in the fridge, it tends to coagulate up a little. But if you liquefy it good, especially for Wednesday, because we do not have a lot of tide movement. You're going to want something good and wet that gets down there and gets working and gets them attracted, because there's not a lot of current flow.
You're going to have to fish fast.
You are. And remind me never to have a margarita at your place. So your point is very well taken, because that mash, that mixture is your broadcast bait. And that needs to get out there. And we don't have a lot of current flow. And so ideally, if you fill one of your bait barrels with this mixture, and you soak your pots for a half hour, 45 minutes, how much of that do you want to see remaining when you pull that pot, hopefully full of shrimp?
Well, at best, I'm going to get half of it removed in an hour this minimal amount of tide flow that we're going to have Wednesday. But again, the trick is, if you get that small enough, your broadcast bait has to be small enough to go through the mesh of the bait barrel.
Gotcha.
Because if it won't go through, it'll just plug the hole, and you're broadcasting far less bait. So you got to have one bait container in there that broadcasts, and then you got to have another one in there that holds a solid. And that's where I take the monster mash, and I just break it up into the popsicle form and put it down there frozen, and then as it thaws, it gives off too, but yet it leaves chunk of the mash in the other bait barrel. Once they get in there, they'll hook and hold them and keep them in there for the balance of that 45-minute to an hour soak.
So, Bob, let's talk a little bit about placing your pots. How often are you going out and finding a new fishing spot, like on an opener like this, or are you going to an old haunt, someplace you've shrimped before? You're going to look for prawns down there with your finder, but are you starting at a spot that you've caught fish or caught prawns before?
Yeah. We have been so busy in the past years with the midweek openers, we've had to stick close to where our boat is moored, and the success there has been awful. I probably shouldn't admit it, but I got 19 shrimp last year, for 4 hours or six. I think it was a 6 hour opener, and 5 of them were given to me by another disgusted guy out there.
So another disgusted
guy. I am venturing north to an old haunt. I'm going to go up off Bainbridge Island this year, to an old spot. My family's from Bainbridge, and I got a little honey hole up there that hopefully hasn't been touched in a while, and I'm going to drop my gear there, weather permitting. I'm going to make the kick and head up there. And
We're talking with Bob Buchanan of BOMAC Tackle this morning. And Bob, so you're the one that kind of introduced me into the concept of fast fishing and slow fishing pots. Obviously, with the limited amount of time we have, discuss that concept for us a little bit and what your pots need to look like to fish these short windows and do so effectively.
Yeah, you're permitted to have a pot that the entrances are no more than half the circumference of that pot. So you want something with big entrances that you can get going and pull every 45 minutes to an hour. If you got something that's, let's say, it's got four smaller rings, those have their application in some areas, and some areas have so doggone many shrimp you can get by with those pots. And they're very convenient for your boat and everything. But the rigid pots have got a double bait well in them, and they've got half the circumference of the pot is an opening for them to get in. And that, you know, that gives him five times the space to get in that pot, and therefore it's just the law of averages. You get a lot more shrimp per pull.
Yeah, no question about it. And so now the other thing that we're talking about, we covered bait. Now we got a general idea about pots. The other challenge that sits on everybody's mind, which is an efficiency thing and a safety thing and something you've addressed very, very well, are your crustacean coilers, the line coilers. It's a challenge. Line management's a big hassle for everybody. And we've seen everything from big garbage cans on board and road sacks and hose reels that are meant for lawns. Tell us a little bit about the genesis and now the actual use and application of the BOMAC line coiler, Bob Buchanan.
Well, it was that. I mean, we started out with a extension cord coiler and polypropylene line in the old days, and then it went to the leaded line, which is much more tough and almost impossible to get on that kind of a coiler. And then we kind of took a hiatus from it because we got so busy at work and missed a few openers. And then when we got back into it and went out there, and I'm all of a sudden 5, 6, 8 years older, and I can't step over all that rope anymore like I used to without messing it up. So we took the concept that we had seen on a kind of a bow anchoring platform to the shoreline for larger boats. We took that concept and adapted it to fit in your downrigger brackets. And when you deploy your gear, you can deploy it off these reels with the C-Link system. And so you have a harness that you snap onto the pot. Each shot of line has a C-Link on it too. So does that. And you just attach it, drop it. When you get to the end, you unhook the C-Link from the next coil of rope that's on the winder, and you hook it onto your float system, throw it overboard, and you go drop. Now, when you retrieve that gear, you do just the opposite. But as we all know, we're usually going to set that first pot back down. So you're going to just let that one coil out on the ground. You're going to rebait it and redrop it. But at the end of the day, when you know you're done, you're going to be able to bring that line in. And as it comes in on the ground, you're going to have someone on the other side of the boat with the coiler able to hook that C-Link on it and just roll it in and keep it in nice order. And you're going to have two coils of rope that store in two reels of rope that store in about the space of a basketball and a half. Mm-hmm. And it makes the ride back smoother. It makes everything safer. Removes a lot of frustration when you go to set your gear back down again. And it's a time saver and a very good safety device to have.
Do you always weight your pots, Bob? I mean, some of the octagon pots are pretty lightweight. Are you going to throw a bunch of weight in there? And how do you go about doing that, buddy?
Yeah. Again, that depends on the location and what the current and winds look for that day. But my standard go-to is I'm going to make a pot 35 to 40 pounds no matter what. So I'm adding 20 pounds to mine. I'll put 4 or 5 pound bars in it and drop it down. And the other key to weighting a pot is don't have an excessive amount of line so that, you know, you don't want to be in 100 feet of water with 300 feet of extra line on. to have all that extra drag. But you want to, for flotation, you want to float the equipment as it's needed in a kind of a three-stage approach. So you're going to have a float on there that's going to hold your equipment steady and hold everything there. And then you're going to have two more floats behind it. One of them is going to be actively working, and the other two are just going to kind of be swinging on the surface. As the current picks up, that first float's going to go down, and that second float that's about a foot and a half, 2 feet away is going to kick in. And then it'll go on down the line, and then the third one might kick in. This Wednesday, no wind in the place I'm going. I expect my first float to work and no other float to work. And the beauty of only getting one float working at a time is you're not going to float your gear away, one. You've weighted your pod enough so it's going to stay there. And your pod is not going to wiggle because it's under too much flotation. If your pod is moving with every boat wake and everything that's going on out there, those shrimp, as soon as they land on your pod looking for the entrance, are going to scatter and you're going to be pulling blanks.
So let's talk about identifying areas that shrimp are likely to be by characteristics. Okay, we've got all kinds of different substrate in Puget Sound, from rocky slopes to silty bottoms. We've got areas of high current, we've got areas of low current, we got shallow areas, we got deep areas. When you are prawning a new area for the first time, give us three or four characteristics that you absolutely must have before you even think about dropping a pot.
Well, you definitely have to have a slope. I as well like to see a little something on my recorder, on my my device, my Raymarine device. I want to see some fuzz down there and something going on. I prefer a hard, slaky bottom that those will usually have cracks in it, and that's where these little critters live. And they come out of those cracks and eat and do their thing when the currents are right for them. When the currents are too tough, they hunker right down in there and stay there. And so you want that gradual drop. You don't want a real sharp drop, because if it is a real slippery slope, your equipment can go down and keep going down. So you got to be careful.
And that's where all that weight comes in too. That's where all that weight comes in. You can just anchor that sucker right down. And I mentioned that earlier in the show. Well, you get all that weight in there. You mark a big cloud of them on the sonar. The 35, 40 pounds, that just shoots right down there. There's no drift. You can drop that sucker right on top of those shrimp and load up quick, you know. Pretty exciting.
Well, we got a spot up there in Sitka. We go with Tom, and you're literally on the side of a mountain that looks like underwater, and it's just a shale drop into it and cracks and crevices all over it. And our key to success is that when you drop that anchor, that last anchor and buoy line, you got to set it in a spot that's going to grab and hold, and your pots are down there on that hillside amongst those cracks and crevices in 300 to 600 feet up there. We've seen what happens firsthand if you don't hook and hold right away.
Yeah, no question about it. It's an interesting, but in all that is challenges that have a bunch of lessons. And I just, you know, I hope the weather's great for guys. The tides are going to be just right on the 19th. Bob Buchanan, bow-mac.com. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your expertise. And we're all benefiting by your passion too, because, we get to spend a little bit of time on the water together, Bob. And every time, every trip is a learning experience, which is a chance for you to just add another innovation to your products. And I have endless respect for that and really appreciate you joining us this morning.
You bet, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, Bob.
We'll talk to you soon, my friend. You
have
take
a great
care.
Week, buddy. Thanks,
Bubba.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, the hottest report we heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's RobinsonChevy.com's Really, Where, and it's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really? Where?
It's coming back from the island of Tinny and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
The ocean turning red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonChevy.com's
Really?
Where?
Where? Where?
Roy Robinson Chevrolet RV will take you anywhere.
Really?
And it's vacation season coming up, and I don't care whether you're looking for a Class A pusher, Class B, Class C, travel trailer, fifth wheel, toy hauler, pop-up, camper, boats, and more. You're going to find those all at Roy Robinson RV. You loved your 10-speed bike. How about a new 10-speed truck, man? I punished that diesel of mine, but I tell you what, it is a great tow rig, especially with an extra ton of lead.
I know. I was just going to mention that. You towed your boat to the barge, and then you had to pick up some lead along the way. I just swing and pick up some lead. They dropped with a forklift 2,000 pounds of sinkers and jig heads and everything. And
downrigger balls.
Headed for Sitka. Downrigger balls. Yeah, crazy.
And you know, the trips that we made out to CQ, Tom would hit these like passing lanes with that boat. Mm-hmm. And I just followed the whole time in my Subaru. I could barely keep up with him going up those hills.
It's crazy.
I mean,
it's crazy.
That truck is
like
amazing.
80, 90, 100 miles an hour kind of stuff.
No, but
I'm not
going
to say how fast, he may have been breaking the speed limit. He drives like a fire. It's like he's in a fire truck all the time.
You think? His whole life. His whole life is code red, okay?
It kind of is. It kind of is.
Sirens.
I have get their issues.
Fires. They're on fire.
I have get their issues. I absolutely do. But with towing, it's all about gears. It really is. And that Duramax and that Allison transmission.
Yeah,
just
for sure.
For days.
We just had Bubba on the horn here from SMI Bomac down in Sumner. Of course, they manufacture and distribute some of the best shrimping gear on the planet. And he had some great tips for going out and get yourself a limited shrimp this week. And that's the number one thing on this Really Wear segment is the shrimping opener on Wednesday. Yeah, you just got a few hours in some area. Hood Canal, 4 hours. You know, so you got to get on it and make it happen. I really liked his setup with two buoys. And one of the reasons why I run that, and I've done that for years, whether I'm crabbing or shrimping, is it kind of looks like a commercial setup. And you got a whole sea of yellow pots there. They're all yellow float. Mm-hmm. They all look the same. Well, what keeps old Johnny Boy over there from coming and sliding in and picking your pot right in the middle of the deal? Well, I tell you what, if you got that big old float system sitting in there, it's a lot easier for you to see when you're drifting out there, kind of letting your stuff soak for 45 minutes if somebody else is sliding in. It happens. I've seen it happen before. So anyway, that's one of the other reasons that I like running that big gear, an extra big float on your pot. And then when you're sliding back in to pick your pots, I mean, some of these areas, I mean, there is a lot of floats around. You can just drive right up, hook onto it, and you're hauling immediately. And then the secondary reason why you run that second big float on there is it deactivates that pot, keeps it from shaking on the bottom. It's just another thing in that chain from, you know, that whole setup from your pot all the way up to the floats. It keeps that pot from moving, from the weight to everything else. So anyway, I really like that.
But your point about more than one float, because, you know, when we're crabbing, we fish red and white floats. And when we're shrimping, we have to fish yellow floats, and they have to be labeled, right? But you're right. If you're fishing one yellow float, then your gear looks like 95% of the rest of the gear out there.
Yeah.
Put an extra float on there. Not just and for the reasons that Bubba says, that staged flotation, you just indicated, Robbo, but also for quick ID. It's also huge.
Yeah.
And look, we're coming into a really, really busy phase of what's going on here in Puget Sound. I mean, the end of this month, Memorial Day weekend, we're going to have some more river fisheries opening up with the Skycomish Chinook field going.
Yeah.
Tulalip Bubble actually opens up in a couple weeks here on the 29th of May. So, man, if your boat ain't ready yet, you don't be the guy that shows up the Friday on Memorial Day weekend thinking you're just going to get slid right in there. I mean, get your stuff ready. We've said this.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy on the boat ramp and your boat doesn't start and going back to Tyler Field. Now there's 10 guys yelling at you and honking at you, and you're the jerk that's holding up the line.
And it's okay to go practice with your trailer. It's totally fine to go practice with your trailer. Go out there in the evening during the week after work or something and go make a couple passes at the boat launch and try to get that trailer right in there next to the ramp or in next to the dock so you can slide that boat right off, pull it right in, and off you go. It's totally fine to go do that ahead of the opener. But anyway, we've been focusing a lot on the shrimping opener here this week, but man, there's still plenty of trout to be caught out there. The trout opener was a few weeks ago, and there's just still a pile of trout in these lakes, and it can actually even get better as these lakes warm up. So that's another thing to do. The bass fishing is on fire everywhere right now. Smallmouth, largemouth, it's going off. Walleye's going off in eastern Washington. The trout fishing's fly fishing's happening right now. I know the Yakima River is going. Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff to do right now. We've been focusing on the shrimp opener, but you got lingcod, halibut. The options are endless right now. Fishing here in Western Washington.
The tides for this shrimp opener are also great tides to lingcod fish. So you drop your pots, go try to get yourself a lingcod.
Yeah, just exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, I love fisheries where you can go out and get more than one thing, you know? And more and more in this state, it's like we don't have that opportunity.
Right.
So look, you have an opportunity to go out and catch some amazing lingcod, one of my favorite fish to eat, and get those filthy, disgusting prawns.
Yes.
Along with them.
Joe's allergic to prawns, thank God. So we don't have to worry about him going out there and getting them. Also, your special hunt apps, that application period is open right now. I think you got, isn't it May 26th or something?
May 26th. So you got a little over 2 weeks to get that done. And I already done it. So I feel good about that.
Yeah, go get that stuff submitted. I got a little bit of time left to go get yourself a turkey, too. It's a little bit late in the season now, but there's still some turkeys running around over in Eastern Washington.
And the cool thing about the turkey hunting late is a lot of guys have given up or they're going to do other stuff, so you might have the woods to yourself.
Yeah, well, and I know you guys, you're departing here pretty quick for Southeast too, Joe. You guys are going to be smelling like bear by this time next week. I bet we're going to be
bear fat.
Yeah, here we go. You guys are going to be smelling like those rock rolling Southeast Alaska beach bears here quite shortly. I know that. So, all right, man. Well, thanks for listening to the Outdoor Line. You know, you follow us, give us a follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at The Outdoor Line, at Joey Pyburn on Instagram, at Rob Ensley. Thanks to Matt Nelson in our Seattle studios. Thanks to Rob Ensley coming at us from Craig. Joey Pyburn here in our Seattle studios. I'm Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.